In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. COVID cases, hospitalizations, and deaths have continued to trend down in the past couple of weeks across the country, also here in Iowa. Those who've contracted COVID and perhaps suffered from significant flu-like symptoms, perhaps a loss of smell as well, most young and middle-aged people get back to their normal health. However, some people infected with COVID-19 continue to suffer serious health issues for weeks, for months even. These are so-called COVID long haulers. Doctors are still studying the long-term effects of this new virus. This half hour, we want to get to know one Iowan whose health has been severely affected by COVID over a period of months. Anthony Navarra is with us. He's a 41-year-old resident of Coralville. Anthony, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Looking at some of the things you've experienced in the last few months, I'm very sorry. You have had some serious health complications dating back to when you were first diagnosed with COVID. Let's start back there. Tell us, when did the symptoms start for you? This would have been late last summer, right?
Yeah, it was about the first week of September. I had come home and just felt really, really bad. Felt like I had like a knife going through my back kind of thing. Had trouble even walking up my stairs to that point. And just thought I had had a rough day, you know, working and doing that. Next day, just felt kind of run down. And then I got a little bit better 2 days after that. So figured I was, you know, just kind of run down. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was allergies, something about, you know, along those lines. And then all of a sudden it buried me from about, I would say about September 6th or 7th is when I really started feeling really bad. I didn't want to eat anything. Couldn't get out of bed. Just felt so weak.
How were those second set of symptoms different than the first wave?
It was brought on a lot harder, and a lot more symptoms. I had the run down feeling still, but I didn't have the fever that I had. I didn't have, the chest ache that I had, that kind of thing. It wasn't as front and center then as it was back, you know, the few days before. I couldn't get my fever down. I had trouble breathing. I didn't have that problem the first set. And then, just to get up and go to the bathroom, just to go down the hall, I couldn't do it. I kept losing breath, had to rest, had to stop. And, I mean, we're only talking 200 feet, 300 feet maybe.
Wow. And yeah. And you had some previous health conditions or some existing mm-hmm. conditions that you were dealing with before getting COVID?
Yeah, I'm a type 2 diabetic. I have been for about 12 years. And I also had high blood pressure before this.
Okay. Important to know a little bit about that background. Also important to know that your wife is a nurse. She was obviously alarmed as well. Take us to the point where you decided to be hospitalized. When did it get that serious?
I went and got tested on 9/11 that morning of, and they told me you'll get your results within a few hours. I said, okay. So got home and, you know, just laid around, got my results, and I came back positive. Got a phone call from the university that said, if things get worse, just call this number. Let us know. Kind of stayed, you know, idle, I would say, you know, not getting worse, not getting better within the next 2 or 3 days. The day of about the 14th that night is when it really started to come on. They had sent me a oxygenizer and a blood pressure cuff, and my oxygen was dropping fast. The morning of the 16th, when I checked my oxygen, it was down to 72. And my wife said, "You need to." Yeah.
Yeah, and just as a reference, when it gets down to the low 90s, you would start to worry in normal conditions, right? Our blood oxygen level should be in the mid to upper 90s, if I'm remembering right. And yours was 72. That's alarming.
Yeah. And that's when my wife said, "No, you need to go. That's mm-hmm. it." So I said, "I can't get out of bed." You know, so we called the phone number, and they had told us, "Just sit tight. We will take care of everything. Just let them lock your front door." So then they loaded me in the ambulance. They immediately put me on 15 liters of oxygen to try to get my breath up. They had to run two tanks together, to try to catch my breath or get it up to that point. And it still would not get over 90. It was about 86 at that point.
And you're conscious this whole time, or were you dipping out of consciousness?
No, I was conscious. There wasn't the decision to put me on the ventilator until I would say maybe 2 or 3 hours into that day. The doctor had come in and said, "Look, I don't really like doing this, but at this point, I don't feel that there's any other decision to make." So I said, "Well, can we call my wife?" He said, "Yeah." So we called my wife from the room, and my wife said, "Well, what do you think?" And I said, "I don't want to die." So. Yeah. This seems like the only solution to try and do it. And, you know, I was starting to kind of fade in and out and just get exhausted at that point. And that was the last part of anything I remember for about, you know, a few days, what seemed like. Yeah.
Okay. So you spent, I'm seeing here, 6 days at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics Medical Intensive Care Unit, ICU there. 5 of those days on the ventilator. So when you're on a ventilator in the condition that you were, what is it like? Are you just gone? Are you half there? What is it like?
It's really weird. They had brought me in and out a few times. I was actually in the hospital for a total of 10. 6 of them were on the ventilator. Mm. And so it's really strange. At one point, I did think that I died. I had woken up, and my wife had hung pictures up. And when I had come out of it, I had seen the pictures, and I thought they were a shrine. So when my wife was next to me, I didn't talk because I was afraid that I had passed away. I remember some stuff. I remember having 24-hour care one night because I was constantly being bothered with people coming in and out of the room. When they had taken me off of sedation, when I started getting restless, I was told that I was put back on. So you're coming in and out of it. It's just a lot of confusion. Every time it seemed like I would wake up in a different room, you know, and it may not have been a different room, but the problem was it was morning or night. And you still don't understand. For me, I didn't understand. I thought we were still in the same day, you know, because you just don't, you lose track.
Right, and your brain is so oxygen deprived, it's playing tricks on you, not knowing. But is the sense there panic, anxiety, or are you just so drained that you are? I don't want to say peaceful because it's anything but a peaceful situation. But you're just so out of it, you can't even be anxious, or can you?
Yeah, for me, I wasn't. I was told at the beginning I was ripping out my cords. But again, I have no recollection of that. I don't remember any of that. They had put like little boxing gloves on my hands, so I wouldn't be able to do that. When we were leaving the hospital after day 10, I held them up to my wife and I said, "What are these?" And she goes, "Well, they had to put those on you." And I said, "Well, there's teeth marks in them." She goes, "Yeah, you tried to bite them off." And I don't remember any of that.
Okay.
And once you go on from that point, you are just, for me, I was so exhausted. I was more at peace. When I was loaded in the ambulance, I had the feeling that I was going to be dead. I had told myself that there's no way. And that's why I had kind of fought to go to the hospital. Cause I knew I just had a feeling. That was my gut feeling, was I was not coming home, or if I was coming home, it was not going to be in to, you know, anything normal. I was going to be moved on or passed on.
Mm, how scary. If you've just joined us, my guest this half hour, Anthony Navarra, 41 years old, resident of Coralville, recounting his diagnosis of COVID last fall, being admitted to the University of Iowa hospitals there, spending several days there in the intensive care unit, many days on a ventilator, which he's just talked about. Well, let's talk a little bit about being discharged from the hospital. Mm-hmm. You thankfully overcame that very dire situation, because once you put on a ventilator, your chances just statistically are not good. You pulled out of that, and that's wonderful. So post-hospital, you still had issues. You were at home. Mm-hmm. How did it develop from there?
I thought when I got home, I'd be like back to normal within a week or two and ready to go. And it's been the furthest thing from that. I developed foot drop in the hospital from being on the ventilator. And basically foot drop is when you can't raise your foot up in any way or hold it for a long period of time. I developed blood clots and was readmitted a month after into the hospital again because of the blood clots in my right leg due to the ventilator. I've now been diagnosed with peripheral vein damage in my right leg from this, where I have no or very little circulation running up and down my foot. So my foot turns a very dark, like shade of purple constantly. I still can only move two of my toes on my right foot. I constantly have tingling on the top of my foot. I have pain in the back of my leg going up to my hamstrings. And I have a continued burning sensation in the right side of my calf and in the back of my calf area in my right leg.
Sounds terrible. Anthony, let's add to this conversation someone who's been helping you out. Mm-hmm. Milena Billups is with us, a certified and licensed prosthetist and orthotist, if I correctly pronounce those, at the American Prosthetics and Orthotics Office in Iowa City. Milena, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And you are, how did you work with Anthony once this foot drop developed? What was your role?
Well, his doctor and physical therapist figured they would send him down to us to see if we could evaluate him, find any sort of brace that could help him in any way to keep that foot and ankle stabilized and in a safe position for him to start ambulating and getting around a little bit better again. So at that time, we evaluated his situation to try to figure out what the best thing going forward for him would be. So we decided to make this brace for his right foot and ankle to try to combat that foot drop, keep him in a more neutral position so he could safely ambulate around and hopefully get some of that pulmonary conditioning back up to where it used to be and get him a little bit more mobile comfortably and safely too.
Talk a little bit more about what foot drop is and what we know. This is a new disease, COVID-19, its connection to foot drop.
It's hard to say maybe what COVID's connection to it is. It can happen for a lot of different reasons, whether it would be an injury or a damage to the nerve that connects to those muscles to help pick those toes and that foot up out of the way of the ground when you're walking. You know, whether it's deconditioning of those muscles or not enough circulation to those muscles or nerves where it deconditions it enough while you're on a ventilator, I don't know. Regardless, it's basically something is happening with those muscles in the lower leg that pick the foot up out of the way of the ground when you're walking so that you can make it much easier to trip and fall as you're ambulating around. So what we're trying to figure out is, and I think it might be a while until they can figure out any connection between definitively COVID and, you know, any nerve damage, peripheral vascular disease, or foot drop.
Mm-hmm. Anthony, so you wear this foot brace right now. Are you walking? Are you need any assistance? Do you need a walker or a cane or anything right now?
I require a cane. I was on a walker for a long while. I was able to ditch that about 8 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago. But I mainly wear the brace when I go to therapy twice a week and when I'm out and about.
Melina, talk a little bit about more about the treatment here and the therapy. What is happening there, and what is the aim of the therapy?
Well, with the brace, we're trying to give him stability at the ankle, his foot and ankle complex on that side, give it stability side to side so he doesn't want to roll it to one side or another and keep those toes up out of the way when he's walking. With all of his kind of nerve damage or tingling sensations and pain in his leg, we also wanted to try to keep him as comfortable as we could for him and spread that pressure out. So we tried to cover a large portion of his leg to spread the pressure out further to make it more comfortable for him so that he can utilize this during therapy and beyond. And in therapy, you know, trying to increase the muscle strength and the conditioning that he has now and increase it going forward.
Melina, what is Anthony's prognosis?
He's a very motivated patient. I think he has a good prognosis, and things keep cropping up. COVID has been acting very oddly to him, and I know there's no way to guess what's going to happen next, but you know, with this brace, hopefully we can help him keep going in his rehab journey to get him to the top, get him back to what he wants to be.
Right. Anthony, what is your understanding of your prognosis and your hopes?
It's a lot up in the air. I don't think a lot of people really know for sure. My hopes is, I have to be realistic about it. You know, I'm trying to be very positive, but in the back of my mind, I have to be realistic about this as well. I don't know if I'll ever be the same. But the hope, that's the goal, is to at least be somewhat of the same. That's where I would at least like to be, somewhere in the neighborhood of how I was before.
Can you work, resume
No.
some parts of your normal life?
No, I can't drive currently. I can't work. I can't stand more than 10 to 15 minutes at a time. Stairs are a big struggle for me. To go up and down them, it's been just really, really tough.
Melina, are there other patients that you know of in Iowa, perhaps in the Iowa City area where you work, or that are like Anthony, have a similar foot drop condition?
We have seen a couple that have a similar kind of background and a similar outcome right now. It's not common whatsoever, but we do have two or three patients that have kind of a similar thing going on with foot drop or weakness or something that needs stabilized after an experience with COVID and being on a ventilator for a prolonged period of time.
They do have this common. So foot drop can develop. I mean, we had foot drop in pre-COVID times, but you're saying these other cases are also tied with COVID infections and hospitalizations and periods of time on a ventilator?
It does seem to be a correlation that they all have in common, yeah. So it'll be interesting to see in the future what they work out from that and what they can discern, you know, is happening.
Anthony, talk a little bit about your view of COVID before you were infected. Were you careful? Do you know where you contracted and how you contracted COVID? So many don't.
My wife, you know, she would come home every night, and she first at the beginning, she was the one that said, we need to really take this serious. So we did take it very serious from the beginning. With having her working at the university. So she saw firsthand kind of what was kind of going on. As far as knowing where I got it, I have a feeling I know where I contracted it. There was only really one place that I was at that my wife and I weren't at together during that period of time. Mm-hmm. We've kind of narrowed it down to where we think we might have said. I don't really want to say where because I can't I can't pinpoint it. You know, I can't say for sure that that's where I got it. But I do have a feeling, yes.
What is your view of the larger view, your special, unique view now, having suffered so much from COVID-19, on how our society, how our state is dealing with it in terms of course, the vaccine is a wonder, and we want to get everybody vaccinated as soon as production ramps up and distribution happens. But, of course, the big tussle over mitigating this deadly and harmful virus, social distancing, masking up. What is your view there when you see perhaps others who are acting, frankly, carelessly, not maintaining social distance, not wearing masks in public where they should?
It upsets me. I mean, I wouldn't want anybody to go through what I went through. I mean, even my own worst enemies, I wouldn't want them to go through this. I don't think people do take it serious. Yes, I'm probably a rare case that has had as much happen to me as it has, but it's still possible. I mean, I don't think us as a society, many people have taken it serious, especially younger people, I don't believe have. And I don't consider myself old. I mean,
yeah, I'm 41. It's not old. You're in your middle life. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just think it would be, you know, I just hope that with the stories that I've done and talked about, that if it changes one person's view, then at least, you know, it's worth the time and the effort that we're doing all this and talking about it and making it aware to others that, like, hey, that could happen to me. You know, that very easily could, you know. So I think that helps. And then maybe word of mouth, that some that person tells somebody else, and, you know, and so on.
Exactly. Well done, Anthony. That's exactly why we have you on. One of the reasons, and we're glad that you have the courage to tell your story. Anthony Navarra, resident of Coralville, diagnosed with COVID last September, admitted to the hospital, spent time in the ICU on a ventilator many days, and has many chronic problems still to this day, which we've been learning about. Thank you, Anthony, for sharing your story. And Melina, thank you very much for joining us to add to our understanding of what's happened.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
All right. Thank you. River to River. We'll return tomorrow on News Buzz Edition. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.